Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Beats. It is a beautiful day in May here in St. Louis. A great day to get outside, enjoy the sunshine, beautiful weather. And there are benefits to that. Lots of benefits. Some you may not even be aware of. Yes, we all know we feel better when we get out and exercise and get some sunshine as well. Perhaps not too much sunshine. Don't want to get a sunburn, but get out and enjoy that sun. It's a great way to get healthy and breathe in that fresh air. And did you know it can help with other things besides just feeling good? Can also help when it comes to matters of cancer, both preventing cancer or if you have experienced cancer. We're going to find out how that can be helpful. We're going to talk with our friends from Cancer Companions in just a moment. Thanks for underwriter Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. You can find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. Look for Concordia University, Wisconsin, in the sponsor section. Joining me in studio this morning, our friend Karen Tripp, president of Cancer Companions. Karen, welcome back.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you in studio. We were discussing before the program, we should have done this program outside today. It's so nice here in St. Louis. After all this rain we've had, it's nice to have some sunshine. And you brought along with you a friend today, Christy Fry, cancer survivor. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming along today and sharing your story with us. Looking forward to hearing your story.
Thank you.
Karen, for our listeners not familiar with Cancer Companions, I know we talk about it from time to time here on Faith and Family. Give us a little history of and what the organization is about.
Sure. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and basically ended up having a three-year grant from Lutheran Foundation here in St. Louis to do Christian cancer support groups all over town. And when we got to the end of the 3 years, I really felt like the Lord was saying, you know, Karen, you should take all that stuff you learn and teach other people. And so that's basically what we do. We go into churches and we train volunteers how to start Christian cancer support groups and how to meet with folks one-to-one as they're going through their cancer journey. And we have devotionals and videos and Bible studies and all kinds of things to help them do that.
And this has turned into a network across the country now, right?
Yes, it has. We're in 21 states, and we have over 750 volunteers and over 145 churches. And so God's been really good to us.
What does that look like in a church? How is support for cancer patients and their families? What does that look like in the congregational setting?
Well, in the congregational setting, what we're doing with these volunteers is we're teaching them how to walk with somebody through their cancer journey. A lot of times you'll end up finding out that a person, when they're diagnosed with cancer, they're actually healthier on that day than they're probably going to be for the next 12 months of their lives, even if the treatment only takes 6. And so because of that, the tendency is to turn to the church at the time of diagnosis and say, I'm fine. I got this. Which is not necessarily a bad attitude to have, but what do we know about cancer? We know that typically cancer treatment, you'll get to a point where you do need help. You do need support emotionally, physically, all kinds of different ways. And so we train our volunteers to literally step in at that place and walk with them, whether that's, I'm going to send you a text with a Bible verse on it, I'm going to drop notes in the mail to you, I'm going to call you once a week, see if there's something new I can pray for, so that when that time comes that the going gets rough, you know there's a place to turn and that person has devotionals and has Bible studies and has all kinds of ways to talk about Jesus and talk about cancer at the same time.
So equipping the saints to serve their neighbors mm-hmm. through acts of love and mercy during a time that may be difficult for them, particularly when facing cancer. As you said, when you first are diagnosed with cancer, you might be the healthiest you will be for the next 6 to 12 months, because when you're treating that cancer, that's when your body takes a pretty heavy toll.
Yeah, it's really true. Absolutely. And of course, with us having so many wonderful tests that can have early detection now, it's not uncommon for a person to wake up one morning, they just go to get whatever test, that PSA, that pap smear, that whatever that they're getting, and suddenly they end up finding out it's cancer, but they feel fine. Mm-hmm. And so being able to help people sort through that emotionals, because then the treatment starts to make you sick, even if it's making you better. And so it becomes kind of a very twisted path in that way. And I think spiritually, it has lots of potential pitfalls.
Christy, Karen said, you know, one day you can feel perfectly fine, perfectly healthy, and also have a diagnosis that that you have cancer and that have to treat. Is that what happened? Tell us your story. Is that how it happened for you?
I was 47 years old when I was diagnosed, and I was diagnosed in 2010 with rectal cancer. And the test for rectal cancer is a colonoscopy, which today is at age 50. So I had never had one. I did not have any of the common symptoms that come with it. I would call it, it was just a God nudge that from various ways that I ended up with my primary saying, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong, but let's do a colonoscopy just to check. And I remember going to the gal who now does all my colonoscopies, and she said, why are you here? You don't have any symptoms. You don't have any family history. You're not old enough. But we did it. And when she came out and sat next to me on my bed, I knew there was a problem. And she said, well, now I know why you're here. You have two good-sized tumors in your rectum, and even though I'm not supposed to tell you it's cancer, it's cancer. That day, I didn't feel any differently. And I remember waking up the next morning and thinking, I have something growing in my body, and now I feel like I feel different.
Was it overwhelming?
It was overwhelming, as we mentioned earlier, but I there were all kinds of God signs that I saw along the way, because it was a Friday I was diagnosed, and the next morning when I turned on the TV, there was a walk called the ND 5000 that the Colon Cancer Alliance does here in St. Louis, and that was only the first, I think that was the first year they had done it. And so I did one of those lovely pacts with God that day that said that, you know, if I'm alive a year from now, I'll be walking in that. And this past year, I walked for my seventh year.
That's one way that that increases awareness, that event here in St. Louis. It's a kind of a lighthearted approach. For the participants, I think they give out a pair of boxer shorts with the organization's logo on them, and increasing awareness about colon cancer here in the St. Louis area. And they do that all across the country. It's a fun event. But one of the key aspects of that event is getting out and getting some exercise as well.
Yes.
It's a 5K run and a fun walk as well. Did you meet other people at the event a year later?
I did. Along with my family and friends that were there to support me, I met a lot of, heard survivor stories, which is always encouraging. And I think, you know, very similar to breast cancer, today people aren't afraid to talk about breast cancer. Today people still hinge a little bit on talking about colon cancer or rectal cancer. And so I think, until we can talk about it, that's how we're going to prevent it. So, it's a very preventable disease. There's several things, and one of the big things is exercise. It's the research is done that for colon cancer, exercise is a key preventative measure.
You bring up a good point that today in at least in North American culture, we're very pretty comfortable talking about breast cancer awareness, research, treatment. It's almost common talk in our culture today, but there are other types of cancer that we don't talk about much and we're reluctant to. Karen, why do you think that we're reluctant to talk about various types of cancer?
Well, I think that we like to be able to feel that we have control over things we don't have control over, which of course just kind of waters all of us down to having to get to our faith and being able to really acknowledge what we don't have control over. And so being able to turn to the scriptures and being able to turn to prayer and fellowship and those kind of things to be able to cope, I think becomes really important. It's easy to be able to find out that a friend, I think this is common. You find out that a friend ended up getting diagnosed with cancer, and what we have a tendency to do is go up and ask them, well, when did you get your test? You know, did you have a mammogram? Did you have the pap smear? Did you have the colonoscopy? Because you want them to say no. You want them to say, I forgot. You want them to say something like that, because then you feel like, well, I'm getting mine and I'm all right. And so we have this tendency, I think, to empower, to put faith into the medical community and into these tests as being the way for us to control whether we're going to have cancer or not. And of course, there are so many types of cancer that have no test, none whatsoever. And so that really is kind of an illusion, once again, of things that we're not talking about, of all the kinds of cancers you can still get with no test.
No preventative screenings for various types of cancer.
Exactly.
Yeah. Not until something shows
dramatic.
Up until you have a symptom of
exactly.
some kind. Hmm. So you found out you had cancer. Something nudged you, told you you needed to go get this checked out. You have a colonoscopy. They find there's cancer. Where did you go from there once you found out that, you know, from the colonoscopy, there definitely were some tumors?
Well, the doctor who did the colonoscopy, I mean, they immediately sent me to get a CAT scan from there. Then I talked with my primary who set me up with a surgeon, and I would say that I had 10 days to wait to go see the surgeon, but I also felt like, again, that was the person who God had sent me to. I asked for recommendations, and this doctor's name came up in 3 different people's conversations, and it was the only common item. So in those 10 days, I did what everybody does that I tell everybody they shouldn't do. I went to the internet and Googled colon cancer, because at that point, I did not realize there was a difference between colon cancer and rectal cancer. And so I thought that I had it all under control. I talked to people at work. Here's what's going to happen when I go to the doctor. They're going to do surgery. They're going to blah, 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 blah. And when I went to see the doctor, the first thing he said to me was, I'm going to introduce you to your radiologist and your medical oncologist, because you're going to know them for the next 3 months before we do surgery. And so, of course, that threw me for a loop, because, again, I thought I had it under control. I knew what was going to happen. And found out with rectal cancer, it's completely different how you treat it. You do chemo and radiation prior to shrink the tumors, then surgery, and then radiation afterwards. And so I kind of broke it down into 3 stages. And I think that's, now that I see how doctors do it, they rarely tell you your whole treatment at the beginning, because I think it would be way too overwhelming. So each stage, I was like, okay, we're going to do this piece and get through it. And, you know, at that time, I would say that I was pretty regular church attender, but, you know, my faith changed dramatically that first year, because I'm single, never married, no kids. And so I spent a lot of time by myself. And that's when you know, for me, God was the person who I talked to every day.
So who was your support? Who was your network through this struggle? You spent time in prayer, obviously. Did you have anyone else by your side through your treatment?
My mom was my gal. I'm her only child. And so that was tough for her and for me both. But so she was my main supporter, and she had retired a year before. And a year earlier than she wanted to. So, you know, again, we look at all the things that God laid out, that he knew what was coming down the pipeline. So, you know, she was my number one, but the rest of my family was very supportive. I had friends. I had people at work. And what I tell people all the time is that, you know, you may have certain people that you think are going to be your supporters, and they may disappoint you or, you know, turn out not being. But I would say there was a whole slew of other people who I never expected that stepped up and filled some gaps. And so, again, God took complete care of me, even if it wasn't with the people who I thought it was going to be necessarily.
Since mom was the closest, did you see that your relationship changed over time with your mom?
Yeah, it did. You know, that first year, I was in treatment for really a complete year from the time I was diagnosed March 25th, 2010, and finished treatment like on March 5th of 2011. And we all know those dates now. I laugh all the time that, you know, like you keep those. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it changed a lot. I would say it took even a more dramatic turn when a year later I had a reoccurrence. Mm. And so that was probably the bigger change in our relationship, I would say.
How so?
Because I think that, you know, similar to what Karen talked about, I think we have this control, at least I have this control issue, that if I go through and do everything the doctor says, then I'm going to be cured. Because even though those numbers that are given to you, those must be the people who don't do what they're supposed to. So somewhere you know, say that in your head. And so when I was diagnosed, I was told I had a 70% chance of survival. And so I was like, that's great. You know, those 30% must be old sick people, and that's not me. And so when I came back a year later and we found that it metastasized to my lungs, now I had a 30% chance of survival, which meant 70% not. And so I just had a real hard conversation that said, well, if I was in the 30% the first time, I'm going to be in the 30% the second time. You know, it was tough for my mom. You know, she says, you know, no mom's supposed to lose their child before them. And so we had to have some really hard conversations. But I would also say she made probably changes in her life. I made changes in my life. I decided to retire at age 51, which I would have never done if I hadn't. And I don't think if I had gotten diagnosed even the second time. I think the first time, if everything would have went, quote unquote, okay, I would have worked just because that's what you're supposed to do. But it really, that reoccurrence gave me a real look at what am I doing with my life, and more importantly, what was His plan for my life, and what can I do to make sure I'm fulfilling that?
How else did your lifestyle change? Were there new things incorporated into your lifestyle?
Yeah, I think that for me, I changed my diet the first year, and some of that really just had to do with colorectal cancer. Sometimes there's just foods that you no longer can eat. I would also say, though, there are foods that, you know, which again goes to our American culture. For colorectal, we really aren't supposed to eat much red meat. And as a society, we're not supposed to eat much red meat, but that's not what happens here. So that was probably the biggest one. But I would say that, you know, I worked full-time through it. I worked in a job that I was probably 60 hours a week. And so even though I knew I should be doing some exercise and things, I was too tired. And especially after that first year, after treatment, your body's just recovering. And so when I had the reoccurrence and started looking at some things, I really said, you know, you can keep on doing life how you did before and look where it got you. And not that there's any guarantee, but, you know, the research, especially for colon cancer, is exercise is a huge, lowers the risk for reoccurrence. And so I really can't afford to not do my part, I guess is what I'm saying. Again, you know, it's within God's plan, and whatever, you know, when it's time for me to go home, I go home. But I want to make sure I'm doing as much as I can, plus the fact that I feel much better, you know, today. I take 2 Zumba classes a week. I do a cardio class a week. And I adopted a rescue dog, which helps me walk every day. And honestly, I couldn't figure out how to do those things when I was working 60 hours a week either.
So you incorporated these things, this new exercise into your life to be a good steward of the body that's entrusted to you as a gift from God. How did you find exercise that worked for you? I know many people face the same thing, the same scenario you did, that it was just, I'm too tired. I don't have time to exercise. I work X amount of hours a week. I work 50 hours, 60 hours. I don't have time to exercise. I'm exhausted. How did you find something that worked for you?
I had known about a program through the YMCA, that Live Strong, that they offer a program for cancer survivors. And I finally made the phone call. I had known about it for a while. I made the phone call before I retired. And I went and saw them. And it was a program where they give you a 3-month membership free at the Y. And they also then do a one-on-one and group support with other cancer survivors. And so that was kind of where I felt like somebody was going to help me know what I could do and what was helpful. So I did that program and came out of that and have continued on it. And I think the other thing, like I said, even though I use the excuse that I was working too much, you know, I tell people all the time today, even if you can walk 30 minutes 3 to 5 times a day. So if you've got a dog or you can walk around the block, any amount of additional exercise that you weren't doing before helps lower that risk.
Karen, walking has been key for Christy in terms of getting into regular exercise. I mean, she mentioned Zumba and a cardio class as well, but I think one thing that she lit up about when she was talking about exercise was she adopted a rescue dog that helps her stick to that commitment of walking on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. How is walking key to good health when it comes to cancer, whether it's prevention or follow-up?
Well, the truth is that there's a lot of statements and things that people end up saying of do this and it can help prevent cancer, do that and have it help prevent cancer. And everything typically has a limited amount of truth to it, in that it really is something that goes across all the aspects of cancer. However, if you get into the studies and you really start looking at the clinical trials, what you'll find is that, what do you know, there is one thing that pretty much all the land of oncology agrees on, and that is that exercise, moderate, consistent exercise, will end up reducing your risk of cancer. And so that's definitely true for folks who have never had any incident of cancer in their life at all. And the statistics even soar for folks who have had cancer, in that exercise can end up reducing the risk of the cancer coming back. And so it just makes good sense. And I'll tell you, I think it is one of these well-kept secrets. You know, I think there's this tendency that we hear about people getting diagnosed and we're like, oh my gosh, I wish there was something I could do so that didn't happen to me. But we don't think there is anything, you know? And so because of that, Cancer Companions has come up with a new program where we're doing a prevention awareness program called Take a Hike from Cancer, which is all focused on, let's just get the word out so that people discover that moderate, consistent exercise can reduce your risk of cancer.
I think our reluctance to exercise is we often think of something that's just either excruciatingly painful or difficult. Like we picture, you know, lifting weights or, you know, something just completely exhausting.
Like we're talking about spandex. I mean, that's the issue here. I think for a lot of us, it has to do with the wardrobe issue. So,
well, you bring up a good point, though. This is one of my philosophies. I think having the appropriate clothing that you're comfortable in is motivating to exercise too.
Exactly.
You know, having clothing, workout clothes that you're comfortable, that you feel like you look good in.
Yes.
Not something like, oh, I can't wear that.
Well, but we get bombarded with these images.
Right.
You know, that everybody that exercises has these incredibly perfect bodies, you know, and so you're supposed to have the perfect body so that you can get the spandex so that you can exercise. And so, yeah, I think there really is a piece of just being able to say, it's just for folks like me. Mm-hmm. It's just for folks like me. And walking is the kind of thing that is for anybody.
So we're talking about brisk walking, mm-hmm. that gets you breathing.
Yes.
Gets you, your heart pumping a little bit. We're not talking about totally exhausted. Now, it might be the first few times you go.
Right.
Depending on what your exercise has been like in the past. But getting some exercise, going out for a brisk walk. Now, this campaign, Take a Hike from Cancer. Tell me about that.
Well, the idea is to be able to get the word out and have ways for people to get their loved ones to start to engage. Excuse me. And so if you think about it, most walks focus on a certain number of hours on a Saturday morning. So what we're doing is we're saying, no, we need to have a habit. And so to have a habit, we want to take at least a week to be able to do that. So we're taking the week of June 4th through 10th, and we're asking folks all over the country to just pledge how many times they're going to walk that week. Are they going to walk 2 times, 3 times, or 4 or more times? That's all. They're just going to pledge how much that they're going to do that. And then what we're asking you to do is to challenge other people that you love, who you know are not doing it like they need to be able to go out and do the same thing. And so that's part of the energy that we're trying to be able to generate, mm-hmm. almost like an ice bucket challenge of people starting to do videos and challenge one another and say, come on, I'm going to take a hike for cancer. How are you going to take a hike for cancer?
We have just about a minute left, and I want to share some more information so folks can find it. But I got to ask your favorite place to hike before we go to that information. Christy, do you like to hike?
I am not a hiker. I am a walker. My neighborhood is actually my favorite place. It's a great way to get to know your neighbors. And I live in the city, so I have lots of parks to choose from also, which I love.
Karen, how can we find out more about Take a Hike from Cancer?
TakeAHikeFromDancer.com. You just type it on in there and you'll go to it and you'll end up finding out how to be able to challenge other people with a video or how to be able to state your own claims and how to be able to make a difference in your life. And there's lots of materials out there from devotionals and prayers and all kinds of things to help you stay focused on doing this.
TakeAHikeFromCancer.com. And the big push is coming up this summer, you said?
Yep. June 4th through 10th is when we're focusing on asking people to pledge how much that they're going to hike that week.
June 4th through the 10th, TakeAHikeFromCancer.com. Our time is up. Thank you so much, Christy. Thank you, Karen, for being my guest today. Cancer Companions as well, cancer-companions.org. You can find out more information there as well. Up next, we're going to revisit a conversation on the benefits of hiking.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
If you gave someone an award for being champion of the century, would it be Hillary Clinton? Well, that's the award Planned Parenthood is bestowing on the former presidential candidate for her 40 years of pro-abortion activism around the globe. Planned Parenthood was putting everything they could behind her campaign because she's proven herself to be a hard-nosed abortion advocate. America's unborn babies would have suffered greatly under her administration. Planned Parenthood is also giving their Champion of Change Award to the creator of an immoral TV drama. She's being rewarded for writing a scene depicting a woman smiling as she has an abortion with the cherished Christmas carol Silent Night playing in the background. This organization and the people they honor promote evil, so it's very important we pray for them.
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson with an invitation for you to join me over the weekday noon hour for Moments of Assurance, your lunchtime spiritual recipe. You'll enjoy encouraging scriptures, a bit of Bible history and trivia, news items, humor, the kids' corner, and more, all mixed in with faith-strengthening sacred music, a blend just right for your midday hour. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance over the weekday noontime hour here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Would you like your investments to support the work of growing God's kingdom? Hi, this is Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. When it comes to your financial needs, LCEF offers investments for everyone from infants to grandparents. And when you invest with us, you're not only supporting LCMS ministries, but you're also partnering with a financial institution that shares your Lutheran beliefs. Learn more at www.lcef.org.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on behalf of Concordia Plan Services, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, the LCMS Foundation, Lutheran Housing Support Corporation, Concordia University System, and Corporate Synod, daily reaches out to our members and partners, working together to support our local, global, and international ministries, church workers, and LCMS initiatives at large to carry the mission forward and to serve each other in love. Opportunities to serve, lcms.org/jobsboard.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Faith and Family.
Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. It is October. Doesn't feel like it in some parts of the country today, but it is October, a great time of year to get out, enjoy beautiful weather, enjoy the changing leaves in so many parts of the country, and enjoy God's beautiful creation. How can that be good for you? How can it be healthy for you?
How could that benefit you and your family? Well, we're going to talk about that with one of our friends from Lutheran Valley Retreat in Woodland Park, Colorado. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. Find out more about them at KFUO.org. Find the CUW logo in the sponsor section. Joining me by phone this morning, Steve Johnson, Executive Director of Lutheran Valley Retreat in Woodland Park, Colorado. Steve, welcome back to Faith and Family.
Well, thank you very much, Andy. It's good to be a part of the program today. So,
well, Steve,
your time.
Thanks so much for spending some time with us. Where are you this morning? Are you out and about around camp or around town today?
Well, I am in town. My wife and I, we have a house here in Woodland Park, Colorado, and just kind of enjoying a leisurely morning this morning, so it's kind of nice.
Well, thanks for spending some of your leisurely morning with us here on Faith and Family. Tell us a little bit about Lutheran Valley Retreat in Woodland Park, Colorado, the history and what it's up to, what you're up to today at LVR.
Well, right now, you know, our history is been around, established by a group of Lutheran families from Colorado Springs, Colorado in 1959. The camp got its first start in the mid-60s with 3 weeks volunteer run. They bought the property for the entire Lutheran Valley property is 900 acres, and then they sectioned off 237 for Lutheran Valley Retreat, and been running camps since about 1965 or so, and then 1980s we started to do year round ministry with various directors throughout the years, and now full on year round retreat. Summer camp for kids, families, adults. We do men's, women's retreats, high school, middle school, anything you possibly think of, we try to make happen. So,
and I bet part of that time involves getting out, doing some hiking, just exploring and experiencing God's beautiful creation in that part of Colorado.
Absolutely, absolutely. We do, that's actually outdoors is what we do. We don't really, even in the winter, we do have a couple facilities where we can run some indoor activities, but mostly we're outside all year round. It's a beautiful place, enjoying what God has for us.
Now, you're not a Colorado native, though, are you?
Correct. I actually come from Columbus, Indiana, but been out in Colorado since graduating college in 2000, and worked at Lutheran Valley for the last 13 years.
Well, thanks be to God that you are there. What do you love about your work at LVR?
Every day is different. Some days, it's in the office. We're working, like right now we're planning on our 2017 schedule, working, just getting everything organized. But tomorrow, I'll be out at camp working with our new program director and getting things set up for the next couple weekend retreats we have. And then Thursday, it's great. Every day is a little bit different. So it's perfect for my personality style.
Now, what access do you have to trails and hiking there in the area around Lutheran Valley Retreat?
We actually have a couple different trails. We've built a lot of our own trails on our property, just some beautiful views. The Grinder Loop is built by a group in Michigan, what we call it. We have the Cedar Mountain Trail. It's only a mile long, but it takes any group roughly between 2 and 3 hours just because of the elevation gain, the rock scrambling, things like that. Cedar Mountain overlooks the entire valley. It's just a beautiful hike. And then we have about a mile and a half one-way hike down to this old stone cabin just off the property in the National Forest that actually is old, just a cabin a guy built back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. He tried to just find gold in the entire area, and that cabin's still standing. So it's down tucked away in a valley. It's really beautiful.
Did you grow up, Steve, did you grow up hiking? Did you do a lot outdoors when you were a kid?
I did, actually. My parents lived right across the street from woods, and if I had free time and the weather was nice, even if the weather wasn't nice, we'd fall through the creek and the ice, my brothers and I. We were out in the woods a lot, making jumps with our bikes, finding where else new areas to go. We just spent a lot of time out there. So
you love being outdoors. What is it that you love about being outdoors?
It's kind of feel like it's changed over the years. I think the biggest thing has been with the increase of just the busyness of camp and with the, less time with the family, I found that just being outdoors and being with in creation it helps my mind to see a bigger world and say, okay, my problems aren't that big. There's more things going on out there and there's more people to reach for Christ. Let's you know, it helps me refocus, I would say, and look at the bigger picture rather than, you know, focusing on those little things that bother me day to day.
When you're outside, when you're on a trail, when you're out just enjoying the creation that in which God has placed us to live and to serve, mm-hmm. where does that take your mind? You said it takes you away from the little things that seem to bother you day to day.
Yeah, that's right. What I see is I just see that bigger world that God has given us. And it takes my mind just to see how big he is, first of all. And yeah, he still loves me, you know, and yet he still sent his son to die for me and then rise for me so that we can live and we can love others around us. And those little changes of perspective help my focus in the day. It's like, okay, this is why I do what I do, is to lead children, youth, families, adults to the feet of Jesus so they can know the Lord and Savior, and helps me keep that perspective. And it also helps me as a father say, oh, I need to get my kids out here and see this too, because this is amazing things out here. You know what? In Indiana, we didn't have big mountains, but we had forests. There's nothing like the sunset over my grandparents' farm. There's nothing like the sunrise on top of the little hill we used to go to. Just even in, you know, it does, you don't have to have mountains to get outside and enjoy the creation of God.
What are some of the benefits that we can receive from getting out and hiking specifically, you know, hitting a trail? Obviously it's exercise, but are there benefits to physical benefits, mental benefits to hiking?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, the perspective change, the perspective of, okay, just breathe, slow down a little bit, even though you're hiking, you know, and also, I don't know if a lot of folks are like me, but some days I can't figure out what I did at the end of the day. There are some days like that. I'm going, wow, what did I just do? But then when I go hiking, it's just nice to have that goal, reaching a goal, accomplishing a task, which is get to the end of the hike and go, wow, oh, we did it. And it was good and healthy. And just mind-wise, you know, spiritually, emotionally, it helps balance those emotions. I think the more I spend on the computer, the more I see myself getting upset at things. You know, but as soon as I step outside, get on the trail, my brain is, it kind of clears up a little bit. And then I get to spend that time, unfiltered time with God on the trail, praying most of the time as I'm hiking. It's pretty awesome.
What are some of your favorite trails?
Some of my favorite trails, you know what, I just took the boys up. We made an attempt at hiking Pikes Peak last week. We homeschool, so we're able to take those times off during the week to go hiking. And we didn't make it all the way. The wind was heavy. You know, it's kind of ironic. The Christian family hiking the Devil's Playground is a place up there. But we didn't make our goal, but it was just a beautiful, you know, hiking any of the 14,000 foot peaks around here, beautiful. Again, you don't have to have those to enjoy hiking. You know, we just, as for us, as me and my three older boys, getting out, we get a chance to talk on the trail. I have nothing else to do but make our goal and talk to the folks I'm hiking with. And if the folks who I'm hiking with, my children, you know, how awesome is that? Quality time. It's amazing. The hike at Pikes Peak, you know, of course, Cedar Mountain, there's a lot of trails around here. So
when did your kids start hiking?
We have been hiking since they were been able to walk. In fact, before they were able to walk, we usually throw them in something. my son Joe, his first time at Pikes Peak, he doesn't remember it. He was 1.5 and he's 9 now. So we just spend time outside. It's healthy for them as well. They love it.
So even using a backpack or something to bring them along so they can enjoy the peacefulness, the quiet of being outdoors.
Exactly. And, you know, getting a little dirty, you know. Yeah, so they've been in back. We did those little cozy things, you know, mm-hmm. where kind of, I don't know what they're, I think that's what they're called. But again, for us as parents, they're going to love hiking because we love hiking. But the thing that they love more than anything else is time with time with us as parents. So they're going to love doing whatever we enjoy doing. But we get the opportunity to bring them along. And so how beautiful is bringing our children along on hiking and helping them enjoy, appreciate God's creation. But also realize it's the majority of it is just time with parents. I mean, that's huge, unfiltered. You know what? I'm not looking at my phone. I'm not worried about the email I'm getting. Just time focused on creation and hiking with them. It's amazing.
I would imagine some of your hikes, it doesn't matter if you bring the phone along or not, there's probably no connection.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. So, yes, I use it for photos, but no one can get a hold of me out here. You know, but that's not the way it is across the nation. I know that, but you can always put on airplane mode for your hiking. You know, turn it off. No one needs to get a hold of you. And most emergencies can wait, but that's hard. That's a hard perspective to understand. So
what about from the kids? Do you ever get any pushback? Oh, we'd rather watch a movie. We'd rather stay home and play a game, or we don't want to, Dad, why are you making us hike so far? Oh, this is so long.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you what, just Tuesday, it's just that constant encouragement that you can do it. But there's some incredible teaching opportunities there as parents of, okay, so let's not look at the end goal. What is this little goal that we can do? Let's just get to here first and let's sit. Well, this, up there, you know, whether it be a mile down the trail if you can see it, or even 100 yards down the trail, hey, let's just get to there, and that'll be our next rest spot. Let's see if we can make it there. And eventually you make the goal of getting to the top. When we hiked on Tuesday, we didn't make it, mostly because when we got up there, the wind was high and it was 25 degrees outside. We were prepared for it, but we knew that the hike back would be pretty rough. So we ended up turning around up to Pikes Peak, but it was just, little goals. There is pushback, but just that constant encouragement. And the kids, the way they know you're there for them, and you got to know your own kids, how far you can push them versus what is going to be their absolute breaking point, because you don't want to reach that on a trail where they just sit down and say, I'm not going any further. So
you've mentioned setting goals a couple of times. How do your children learn from that goal setting? What have they gained from setting those goals when you go out to hike? And for example, the last hike that you were on, you said you didn't reach that goal.
Right.
What do they learn from that goal setting, and whether you meet it or whether you don't?
You know what they learn? I believe what they learn. Of course, I can't get one of them in here to interview because they wouldn't know what they're talking about. They wouldn't know what I'm talking about. Like, Dad, you're crazy. What I see, though, is that ability to, what I've seen working with their own friends is they've been able to do the same thing with their own friends. When they've come to camp in the summer, they're able to do that with their cabin group and stay encouraging and stay positive. Even though they're grumpy on the trip with me, I've seen that turnaround when they're with other folks doing the same thing, being encouraging, setting goals. Let's just get to here. And as they get older, we work that into leadership. What does that look like being a leader? My goal is to train my children to be up, train them to be leaders. And, so it's like, okay, so what does that look like when you're in school? Boy, this end task looks huge. All right, so what's my first goal? First thing, let's break it down to smaller tasks and get those done. And so the big task doesn't look daunting. When we turned around, my middle son, Mason, he was so disappointed. He goes, Dad, I know we can make it. And I go, I know, but the important thing we got to think about is there will be another day to conquer this mountain. But we have the hike back, and we're already tired, and we're not quite half. We're just over halfway. And so we have to think of the whole hike, not just the end goal is the top, but really the end goal is to get back to the car. You can't get back to the car. That's a miserable day, And so it was hard for him to see, I can't believe we're turning around when we're so close. Now, close is still 2.5 miles away. And I thought, well, yeah, it'd be great to make it. I know we can. But, man, that means it's a 7-mile one-way hike, And it's the turning around, we still have 7 miles to go, even though it's downhill. It's against the wind, 25 degrees on the way down. So it's just one of those talking through how do we care for each other? What's the best way to make sure we all succeed? Sometimes means we got to turn around and start over a different day. So So I think he learned something, and he said he did. He was like, "Dad, I get it now." When we got home after he was mad for a while, but he did all right.
Ever taken the kids on an overnight hike, a camping trip on the trail?
We have. We actually did a few years ago. Joe was five, so it's four. He was four. We threw We did a 2-night backpack trip down at the Platte River, which is about 5 miles away from camp. You can drive to the river, and we just hiked in about a mile and a half, 2 miles, set up camp, and then we just spent 2 days out in the forest. Mom got to go on that one too, so that was pretty special.
So the family got to get out and experience an overnight camping trip.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
When is a good time to hike? What are some of the best times to hike? I'm sure it depends on where you are in the country, but what are some of the best times to hike?
Some of the best times, out here in Colorado, the best times are really in that late June, July, especially at our elevation. The weather's pretty mild in the day. Mild means it doesn't really get above 90 degrees. The nights still cool off. If you go earlier than that, the nights can still be down in the low 40s, high 30s. So even in June, it can be that cool outside, which isn't terrible. But with kids, it makes it tough. This time of year is pretty, today is going to be 75, 80 degrees, which is kind of weird for our area. So it's really a hit or miss this time of year. But we did hiking and back in the day at Camp Lakeview in Indiana. It's where I got my start in camp ministry on summer staff there. Hiking, we would hike a little bit and then just it'd be too hot. Let's get in the water. So this time of year in the Midwest is just, I think, one of the most beautiful. With the leaves changing color, it's perfect to get out. Let your kids hike slow and kick those leaves and make little piles and run through them on the trail. You don't have to get anywhere. Just enjoy the outdoors.
Absolutely. This is a great time of year to enjoy the changing leaves here in the Midwest. That's for sure. Yeah. It's not quite cool enough yet.
Yeah. It's still hot. I heard the weather report on 85 degrees. Oh, I think I just died a little inside. So, but it's still important to get outside.
So. Sorry to believe it's October.
Yeah. That's true.
What are some things to consider, important things to consider if you're new to hiking, as you're preparing for your first, day hike, just a mile or so or 2 miles?
Well, we always, what I always go through the boys before we go on a bigger hike is we go through what we call the 10 essentials. With a bigger hike like the Pikes Peak, I made sure we had those 10 essentials because there's a chance on a big hike like that where we can get stranded on a mountain, and we need to be prepared for that. Whether it be weather coming in or just, like I said, you get to the point where one of the kids reaches the end and can't go anymore. What are we going to do? And most of the time, we don't go on hikes that big, thinking through things like what clothes we need. If rain comes, are we ready? Do we all have our ponchos with us? If you as a family do Bible studies on the trail, do you have a little backpack Bible? It's kind of nice to be able to do that. If you get a chance to, great. If not, we can still speak about God. We can still talk about him on the trails. The biggest thing is hydration, water, making sure you got enough for the kids. For an hour long, 2 hour long hike, I would say if you bring about 32 ounces per person, that should be fine. But if you're going for a day, half a day, at least 64 ounces, or if you're going for a whole day, 3/4 of a gallon or a gallon of water at least. And thinking through like, what if we get stuck? How can we get more water? That type of thing. And then we always have, I always make sure we bring a knife. And I'm like, that seems weird. I know if you're in the middle of the city, you probably don't want to bring a knife. But out here, my kids ask me, Dad, why did you have me pack a knife? I go, well, Here's the benefits of having a knife along. We can do, cut some things. We can do a lot of things with a knife if we get stranded. Emergency shelter, clothing's the big things, the right socks, right shoes, sunscreen, those type of things. And then the other thing is making sure mom knows where we are, if we go on a hike without her, or someone else knows where we are and what time we expect to be back, so that if something does happen, like if we're not back on time, they either call us or call someone who can help us. So,
So those are some tips. Any other gear to help us prepare? You mentioned a knife and water and things like that. Yeah. What about your footwear? What about shoes or boots?
Oh, shoes. You know, I'm not the hardcore wear hiking boots wherever I go. I wear shoes that are comfortable. Right now it's, you know, basically a pair of trail runners is what I wear for hiking. And my boys wear, they basically have a good set of tennis shoes. Boots, though, you know, new boots are a little tougher on the ankles. You know, they usually, you know, so you want definitely worn-in shoes, shoes you're comfortable with. Nothing, you don't want to go to, like, REI or an outdoor store and buy a pair of boots and then go hit a four-mile trail. You're going to end up with some blisters. You know, make sure they're broken in, worn for a little bit first. You know, in the backpacks we always bring, we make sure that they have not only shoulder straps, but also waist straps and a chest strap. What those straps do is they take the pressure off your shoulders for the longer days. One of the things with kids' backpacks, they don't have a lot of times a waist strap. And if that's the case, what I've done with my kids is I've had taken a bigger pack. And so the only thing that my kids end up carrying, especially at the younger ages, was just their water for the day. And I usually take everything else, like their extra clothes and lunch and things like that too.
So a good backpack that you can tie down in a couple of places, that you can, you know, strap down in a couple of places, so that it's just exactly. Takes that pressure off your shoulders. Good to know.
Exactly. It's comfortable. So, yeah. And over the time they've gotten, you know, at first they're like, Dad, I don't need this waist strap. And then about halfway through the day when they go, my shoulders are tired, I said, well, let's try that waist strap. And then they'll put it on and go, oh, hey, this is nice. I know. You're welcome. I am Superman, but don't tell anybody, you know. So, yeah.
Have you ever had any emergencies or anything on the trail that made you, you know, think, okay, am I prepared for this?
You know what? Personally, I have mostly hiking, getting above the tree line. We've had I've been on top of a 14,000 foot peak, Mount Bross, and when a hailstorm came in, and making that choice at the moment, do you hunker down? There's not a lot of shelter on top of these. Sometimes there's some things built, or do you keep going? And that one, you know, we actually made the choice to hunker down until it lightened up, but you know, a lot of those scenarios are taken care of in the prep work, making sure we all had the right clothes, we had enough water, we had enough food, that we could sit there for a lot of long time and still get out. We also, and I think the big thing that we also had, that you may not have a problem in different areas, but just making sure you have a headlamp or something that in case you get caught at night. And that's, you know, those are just little things like that. But in the prep work, we weren't too worried about it. We got a little worried when the lightning started, and that's actually when we took off. You know, we got out of there pretty quick, and that was a number of years ago.
Sure. When hiking in the mountains, high altitudes, there are certainly some risks that you don't have at those lower altitudes. Certainly, with the fact that weather can change so quickly in those higher altitudes and in the mountains, that's important to consider as you're preparing to go out on the trail. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, Steve, we're just about out of time.
Okay.
How can we find out more about what's going on at Lutheran Valley Retreat?
Yeah, actually, check out lvr.org. We're also on the Facebook. Just look up Lutheran Valley Retreat. We share a lot of information now through social media. Check it out, what's going on. We got a pretty extensive CERN event program going on for high school ministries. You know, check out that, and there's links to that on our website. We have lots of things going on, climbing camps, mountain bike camps. We're just prepping for an amazing year in 2017. Our theme is Step Out, based off of Hebrews 11:1. Now, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. So we want to lead kids in those steps of faith, bring them into the cross of Christ, understanding who he is. And we are focused on using his creation to uplift Jesus' name.
Steve Johnson, Executive Director of Lutheran Valley Retreat, Woodland Park, Colorado. Steve, thanks for being my guest today on Faith and Family. Thanks for the tips on getting out and enjoying God's beautiful creation on the trails.
All right. Thank you, Andy. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.